This is Trendy. This is RTI.
Oh, well, hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. We've just been having a chat, and I've just lost my place again. Listen, here's a really important story. I think this is one of the most shocking stories, for all sorts of reasons, to have come out this week. It's an exclusive story, which was revealed by one of Britain's leading newspapers. And it is absolutely appalling. And I think the question has to be asked, what's the Pope doing involved in it? Children are being caged in the Philippines to keep them off the streets while the Pope is on a visit there. Is that not the most shocking thing you've heard since what happened in Paris?
Yes, and you know what? It's a complete worry to me because for several reasons. First of all, a street sweeper is supposed to get rid of all the rubbish for when he comes, and that's fair enough. But this is this is human. These are human beings. Yeah. Second of all, this Pope in particular is he's the hardcore Pope. He's the Pope unplugged. He's the Pope. He's the real Pope. You know, the man of the people, Pope. The guy who likes to get out with the little kids who are starving, and he likes to wash the feet of the, you know, children who have run away, and he likes to do all that stuff. So why would he object? And nobody's saying that he has told anybody to remove these people.
No, absolutely not.
Nobody's saying that. But I don't think he would approve of this move.
Well, by attending in the Philippines, as far as I'm concerned, and I'll stand up and be counted on this, the Pope, by attending this meeting, if he says nothing and does nothing about this, then he is approving of what they're doing. There are six million people who are expected to attend an open-air mass, which Pope Francis is going to conduct in, Manila's Rizal Park on Sunday. Right, and it's going to be watched by a global TV audience. This is a thing. This is a worldwide event. And the officials in Manila have gone out and taken children off the streets and dumped them in jail.
With adult criminals.
Yeah, but they don't.
That's terrifying to me. That is terrifying.
It seems like, you know, sweeping the mess under the carpet while you've got a visitor and then just let it be again.
Yeah, it's like shoving everything in your wardrobe and slamming the wardrobe shut while the man comes and inspects the house. And then as soon as you open the wardrobe, all the crap falls out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's terrible. You can't, that's no solution, because that's just a terrible thing. And you know what? Everybody knows what's going on. It's not like we don't know what they're doing.
Well, that's it. There's, I suppose you could call him an activist, a Christian activist out there who's said, and this again, you know, on the face of it, is a good thing that this bloke is saying it. And it is a good thing that he's saying it, but the fact that he's got to say it is quite frightening. And that's Father Shea, who says that he's praying that Pope Francis will speak out on children's rights during his five-day visit to the Philippines. And for a bloke to actually have to stand up and say that, and for the church, for the Catholic Church to still be maintaining silence on this, it's really bad. Yeah,
he should be. If he was any kind of, you know, real hardcore Pope, he would refuse to go until they stopped doing that.
I think that is the best thing that the Pope could do. He could actually stand up and be counted on this.
Going to boycott that. Sorry, other pilgrims, but while the people are doing nasty things to children, I can't in good conscience come.
And I tell you what, mate, I won't go down that road. But yeah, the Catholic Church doesn't have the best reputation as far as children are concerned anyway, does it?
No, and they don't need to be doing this. They don't need to be seen to be to be tipping their hat or looking the other way in this particular instance either.
Yeah. Clean up your act, oh godly ones. Yeah, this is one for you, Eric. Oh, yoo-hoo! Eric, this is one for you, right? The government are looking for an expert, a technological expert, an anorak, a techie, a person who understands technical stuff, to sort out some technology which is operating in the Department of Works and Pensions that's over 40 years old. Yeah, it's for you, Eric. They've designed it for you. You'll be rich. You'll be famous.
No, yes. But he's double age. I don't think they will accept him.
What, you think he's
old? Oh, he's too old to be old.
Yep, yep.
He's too old to be old.
Eric, you're too old to be old. You need to, yeah. Have a bottle of pins and write your own fantasy. But, oh, look, I think he would be great at that job. I really do.
I think he would. Yeah, being honest, I think he would. Yeah, the
I think he's the only person who could do that job and not just throw themselves out a window.
Well, it's a funny thing because I started using computers, must be, I'm trying to think. It's got to be at least 25 years ago. And I actually have captured on floppy disks and all sorts of things like floppy disks, loads and loads of work, which I can't free now. Nobody can actually rescue it. I'm sure somebody somewhere can. And I never thought until this moment, Eric, you can save all my files off my floppy disk.
He can too. He's probably got some gizmo that he made out of a toaster or something. He's a total MacGyver. And the man can make a television out of an old laptop. It's just brilliant. I mean, let him do it. Who's in charge of these? Who do we write to get him to get this job?
In fact, I'm gonna phone him up after him. I'm going to nominate him. Yeah.
Yeah, Mike Bracken. We need to call Mike Bracken and talk to him and somebody else. We'll get you that gig, Uncle Eric.
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
You haven't got anything else to do. I mean, you know, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, but Eric, it's a million. It's a £1 billion contract. You could, yeah, they'll give you a bit of bung out of £1 billion, mate.
Yeah, go on, do it.
And then there's a finder's fee for me and Rachel and Petra.
Yes, for being the cheer squad and doing your PR for you.
Yeah, and getting you the job.
Yeah, and then we want a bunch of free stuff too, so just keep that in mind.
Do you think we get extra pay for this?
Get extra what, darling?
What do you mean?
Extra pay.
What? What do you mean? Don't you have to have pay to begin with to get extra?
Yeah. Or is it or is
don't
the extra
you, don't
all
you
you're
get
after?
Paid?
No. I do this for love.
Yeah, do you? That's the extras. Right, moving on. Right. What's this about the punk band in New Orleans who found £250,000 stolen painting? And what have they done? Have they put the foot through it? Have they set it on fire? Or are they not real? Or have they gobbed on it? Or are they not really punks?
Well, I don't know. It's not very. It's not in the spirit of punk to ring the authorities and tell them that they've found something.
I know. What's happened to punkdom?
Maybe they're like, you know how like Superman during the day is just a regular guy. Although, how nobody's recognised him just with a pair of glasses, I'm not entirely sure. But maybe these people are just like superhero punks. Like during the day, they're just regular Joes who sort of go
social
down. Workers.
Yeah.
Right. And then at night, they're just, you know, hardcore punks.
I actually met in my dim and distant past. I actually met Johnny Rotten and the rest of the Sex Pistols. And, they actually, Johnny Rotten, John Lydon, as he is now known by his real name, is an incredibly intelligent bloke. And so are the rest of them. They're all clever blokes, but they lived and breathed this attitude of punk. I loved punk music. I thought punk music was absolutely incredible. It was stripped down music that became garage music, became all sorts of. Oh, it created a new form of music. But they were punks. They really were punks. Mm. And this bloke, the bassist, Elliot Newkirk, this is what he said. He said, our guitar player was actually talking about how he saw on Facebook that a painting was stolen. Oh, God, that's pretty punk, isn't it? Oh, yeah. I'm a punk. I'm on Facebook.
They'd been before they were Facebooking, they'd done a gig at the House of Blues, and they saw it leaning up against a wall and immediately thought to themselves, oh, we must alert the authorities.
This is
not punk at all.
Oh, no, yeah. Look at that painting. I think that's a stolen one I saw on Facebook. Oh,
that's terribly amiss. Yes. That is a way to the nearest constabulary. But good on you, fellas, for giving it back. That's nice.
Yeah, but you could have done something better. George Rodrigo. Who's George Rodrigo? He's the one who drew it, isn't he?
Yes, and he was...
This story doesn't tell you anything about it, does it? It's called Wendy...
No, it doesn't. It's a terrible article, and nobody decided to put any detail in there at all, but it was stolen in broad daylight. Apparently the thief walked into the gallery, lifted the picture from the wall, and then just left.
And dumped it at the House of the Blues?
And dumped it outside the House of Blues. Like, what, did he just want to take it for a walk? Did he feel that it had needed some air? Or was Wendy looking at it peaked?
Is that like my dustbin?
Yes, it's exactly the same, only it wasn't returned by said...
Well, it was. Well, I don't know if it was... Ladies and gentlemen, let me digress just slightly and tell you about the mystery of my dustbin. I believe in society, like, there are people like Wombles, aren't there? And I can't remember what the gatherers, and people who clear
borrowers.
Up. Borrowers, that's it. Well, somebody borrowed my dustbin, inexplicably. My dirty, stinky old... dustbin. You know, the Oasis song. No, it isn't. It's a Beatles song, actually, but I prefer to talk about Oasis than the Beatles. I am the Eggman. I am the Walrus. And I can't remember what they say now, but... No, the dead dog's eye sitting on a custard thing. Anyway, so that was the way my dustbin looked. It looked like a custard dead dog's eye. It was such a mess. And somebody pinched it from outside my house. So this is the only time that I will say anything good about Facebook. I put a piece on Facebook about the person who nicked my dustbin, the borrower, or the Womble, or whoever he is. And guess what? 2 days later, they brought it back.
You know, Uncle Lee, you've got to be careful, because I saw that on Facebook, and my question was, when it had been returned to you, I thought, you be careful, because that may have been used in the commission of a crime. In New Zealand a few years ago, there was a wheelie bin, or, you know, the same sort of situation
we call a wheelie bin. This really was a bin, yeah.
Yes, a really, really bin, a hardcore bin, and it was stolen from somebody's front walk, and it was returned later. And
why do you call it a walk? We call it a drive. Is that because we're lazy?
No, I just called it that very second. I don't normally call it that at all. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Carry on, dear.
I'm mixing my dialects. this bin was pinched for out in front of somebody's place, and it was returned. But there was also... there was a murder that had taken place, and the police found traces of human being inside this bin after it had been returned. So you need to be careful it hasn't been used to transport bodies or something.
Well, actually, I never thought that.
Or a painting, even a painting that was, you know, lifted from a gallery. You don't know what's been in there.
I know, there might have been loads of punks gobbing in it as well. No, I tell you, actually, that's a really interesting point, because we have to remember, I do live in the village of the damned, and some very strange things have happened here. I think I'll send Andrea out to check the dustbin.
Well, you know what could happen? It could rise up against you in a zombie apocalypse or something. It's really not...
dustbin?
Yes, anything is possible.
Oh, heck. I never thought of that. I'm not going to say... No, if you are the dustbin thief, I apologise. I apologise. You can come and borrow my dustbin anytime you wish.
Just hose it out before you bring it back. Cheers.
Yeah, hose it out. Yeah. Yeah. Right. We're moving on, because this is one for Petra.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, right. What about this, Petra? Do you think this should happen? Nude weddings are going to be legalised in a rethink of the marriage laws in the UK. Do you think we should have nude weddings, dear?
I'll come and watch.
That's the money you save on the
dress. On the dress?
Money people
tell
spend
you what,
on dresses. Crazy.
Yeah, it's been suggested by Chris Grayling, who's a bloke. Yeah, that's right. We've solved that one as well. Me and us here together are brilliant. We've solved it because it's a bloke who doesn't want to buy a wedding dress, does he? So he makes it a law so you can have a nude wedding.
You know what? On a mildly serious note, I have to say I'm really uncomfortable with this story, because we have a government that won't allow same sex marriage still in Australia. Mm.
Yeah.
So to have people say, oh, it makes a mockery of the institution of marriage. That's why they won't let us have, you know, our nice same sex couples have their weddings. But you know, then this sort of stuff happens, and I think Excuse me, where's the mockery? Come on now.
Well, that's right, but is there any... You see, what always bothers me, it's something that really... Really, just bothered. It's bothered me all my life. Really, we are so messed up in our heads about nudity, and that's why pornography exists. Because we are, if you forgive this euphemism, we are screwed up by the nakedness of the human body. We view it as something that we need to cover. We don't view the clothing as something that just keeps you warm and you need for that. We view it as modesty. Why are we so screwed up about nudity in this world?
I think it comes from ye olde times when it was all about, being the shame but ye olde times from, like the Bible times when people were, because the Romans and the Greeks, and they celebrated all their nudiness.
Well, we did, absolutely.
Yeah, and we didn't. And we were all about cover yourself, it's shameful. You can't show an ankle, you can't show this, you can't show that.
And oh, interesting.
It was ankles. All about. Yeah, well, it was all about shame, wasn't it? And it was all about. Well,
you used to have to cover your television legs, your piano legs in the Victorian times, didn't you? They had in Victorian times,
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's all come from a place Eric of shame. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why. Because you should see some of the stuff that these kids today are getting around in. If you can call them clothing, it's a bit. I don't think a hanky and a piece of string really qualifies as clothing, but they get around in it and they think it's great.
But should we be ashamed of Petra? You talk. Tell us, what do you
think? Some of us more than others, I think.
Well, there is the shocking element to me, isn't it? Why are we so ashamed of the human body, Petra?
I don't know. I'm not.
I'm not either.
I agree with Rachel. Some people. It just comes from the past, the way people were brought up. Some of them open their mind and they go in different way, and some of them, they're just sticking out to it.
It is interesting, isn't it?
Some people, when they cover themselves, are doing us a public service by not showing their naked body.
I think you're quite right. In fact, that's the law. We should all walk around naked, except the people who, by law, have to put clothes on so they don't shock the world.
And it should be a public vote. Like, if you could get handed a red card, for example, in the middle of the mall, somebody could red card you and say, "Do get dressed, please."
That's like Celebrity Big Brother, though, isn't it? That'd be like turning the world into a Big Brother. Yeah, red card. You look like Ken Morley. Here's a red card. Get off. I want to talk about this because I think this is amazing. I never thought of this. I have not worn these things since I was about 12 years old. But ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and everybody else, it is the 80th birthday of the Y-front.
Of the tiny whiteys. Congrats. Happy birthday to you, Mr. Y-front, because they're an international garment. Everybody knows what they are from every walk of life. You would know that there's a brief and there's a beer, and it came from the Y front, and they've actually become a major part of fashion now.
They're fashionable. I'm going to go out and buy some.
Yeah. They're really fashionable for girls to wear them.
Why didn't Superman wear Y fronts?
He was modest about his nudity and his clothing as well. Mm-hmm. He thought, if I have to wear my underpants on the outside of my tights, I'm going to make them pretty fancy.
Yeah, but they're fashionable now, aren't they? So, yeah. I've got to point out an error in this. Well, it's not an error. It's just a bit of stupid writing. That actually, somebody's worked out, and it's probably the Y-front makers. Who makes Y-fronts?
I don't know.
But somebody somewhere must make Y-fronts, because more than 500,000 pairs were given out as Christmas presents this year. And whoever wrote this story needs to take it out and shoot it, because he wrote, with more than 500,000 pairs thought to have been given out as Christmas presents recently.
Oh, you dullard, whoever you are who wrote that. You really are a dullard. You. I hope you're wearing your clothes, Mr. Man, who wrote this article.
No, let's be totally incendiary and get taken off the air, right?
All right.
I'm going to ask a question now, which I might become, I don't know, I might be arrested for. I will declare that I go commando. Who else in this studio, not in this studio, in the studios around the world, the Oz studio and the Slovakia studio, who goes commando?
Never.
I yes. don't. I get cold.
I never do.
I live in a cold country.
It's a bit windy in Metrosix, isn't it?
It is, but I'll tell you why I don't, and there's a really good, sensible reason for it. Because I live in a really hot place,
yes.
The articles of clothes du jour are usually underpants and a t-shirt. Because and that's about it, because it's too hot to wear pants a lot of the time. So I can't walk around going commando because I just feel wrong. I feel like there's something missing. It's not a modesty thing, it's just something doesn't feel quite right to me. However, the gentleman who's currently downstairs, he will go without his pants any time you let him.
I think it is a manly thing. I think it is a very manly thing to do, to go.
It's a boy thing, yeah.
Yeah, and I think when it became sort of, it became relevant, when I eschewed my Y-fronts and my budgie smugglers and my big baggy boxer shorts and things like that, and I decided again, I think it was in, I was sort of in my early 20s, and I think it was just opportunism.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's you know, make haste, not waste. But it's true, though. It's true, and you know, Rob has to wear his underpants, and he wears boxer shorts, but they're the, you know, the lycra cotton ones, so they're not baggy ones. But he wears those at work, and he has to because the climate that he works in, if he didn't, he would have all sorts of problems.
I think so. Yeah, I can understand that. There's a top tip in this story. I'm not going on about what it's talking about dogs, but it's a top tip, ladies and gentlemen, and everybody else. Steer clear of polyester.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to have a baby, steer clear of anything that constricts you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Because of the temperature, just for the temperature. The temperature alone will it kills the motility of your swimmers.
Swimmers, that's a good word for it. That's why I was avoiding that sort, because I couldn't think of another word for it. Swimmers, that'll do, yeah. Because what they've discovered, right, I can tell this bit of the story now, ladies and gentlemen, because I've just been helped out by Hot Pants Brunsdon, right? this test, right, to find out about people's swimmers, and the effect that Y-fronts had on those particular items was carried out on dogs, like dogs of the canine variety. And they put dogs in cotton pants. And then they let some dogs walk around with no pants on at all, like Rob, right? Yeah. And do you know what they found out by doing that? Right?
Pants are bad.
No. They found out that there was no significant difference between how many swimmers the dogs had, whether they had cotton pants on or not.
They found that the dogs wearing pants could get into more fancy restaurants.
But it's not about how many swimmers, it's how active they are.
It's the motility of the swimmers. The motility of the swimmers is affected with temperature. So, yes, if you yourself, fine, gentle listener, are wanting to have a baby, don't be doing that Y-front business.
No, don't do that Y-front business. No, not at all. Not at all. And then when you've had babies, right, and you moved on and life's going well for you, and then you think that your little swimmers want to, like, go and visit a different part of the country, want to go somewhere else in the world. What happens to you? What happens to you, Petra? Tell the world what happens to those naughty boys who don't wear Y-fronts.
Your car gets sold for really little money.
I know, he's brilliant. Yeah, a killer if he was my wife. But yeah, a jilted wife got revenge on her cheating husband by selling his £150,000 Porsche on eBay for $20,000.
Good on her. I mean, just you know what? People get really upset and they drink and they drink a lot and they call you in the middle of the night and they yell at you and then they cry and no, none of that with this woman. She just went right where it hurts. And you know what? I think what she did was really clever.
I know.
Really clever.
I do remember a few years ago, I was working, I can't remember which paper it was, I think it was The Sun in Britain at the time, and we got a call from a village down, I think it was in Warwickshire, and this woman had found out that her husband had been cheating, and this bloke had an amazing collection of wine worth probably hundreds of thousands of pounds. And what she did, she went round the whole of the village and put bottles of wine on everybody's doorstep as a present from her husband. So they all took it in and drank it. Yeah.
That's a cool thing to do. It's not destructive. Like, she didn't just smash everything or pour it down the drain or anything. She actually, you know, took the time to go and give everybody a piece of love.
The action.
From this dreadful. Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's brilliant. It's better than wanton vandalism and, you know, it's just, it's more clever.
She's still got her revenge anyway.
Absolutely. Yes. And she did it. I think she did it with dignity. It was a big story in Britain and she became quite famous for it. And also that, I think, protected her from any reprisals through, you know, law or courts or anything like that, because everybody just found it so funny. She also went and cut all his suits up and, sewed up the bottom of his trousers and things like that. She was a good egg, really. I'm glad I wasn't married to her, although I would never have done anything like that.
She's Machiavellian at the heart of her, but still brilliant.
I think she was called June, actually. But,
we need to be careful. We need to be careful, because if Andrea is listening, she might get some ideas.
She's never had an idea in her life.
She would take your Bentley and sell it.
She'll do worse than that. She'll make you wear underpants.
Ooh.
Mm. That'll alert you where you live.
Well, yeah, exactly. Listen, we've only got a very short time left, so I just want to put out an appeal to all our listeners. We're looking for Amanda.
Yes.
That sounds Amanda like a song.
Amanda Hug and Kiss?
Hug and Kiss? Is that what she's called? I've not got that far into it.
No, Amanda Hug and Kiss or Amanda Hug and Kiss? Amanda.
Oh, I see. That was a joke, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was.
That was because it was a rubbish joke.
Yeah, probably.
Mind you, that's what we've come to expect on this show, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Rubbish jokes, yeah. You actually had a tumbleweed moment.
I did. I really did. I figured Eric wasn't here. I should put one in there.
Yeah. Listen, Amanda, if you're listening, the Natural History Museum's looking for you. And if they can't find you, they can just have Eric, can't they?
Amanda Taylor is her name.
Amanda Taylor. She probably isn't called that anymore. But
she's probably Knee Taylor,
yeah. Yeah. You drew a big stegosaurus, right, when you were 14 for BBC's Blue Peter programme. And you won it. And now, inexplicably, no, I don't mean inexplicably. That's terrible, Amanda. I'm sorry I said that. That was just a phrase that I had to read it, right? You're from Bristol as well. Originally, you're from Bristol. The Natural History Museum wants you to stand up and be counted because they want to use your poster. Brilliant.
I think it's excellent. She needs to come back and, you know, claim her fame.
She does. Listen, we've got to go. We've got to go. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Radio Tetris International gets on your wavelength. www.rti.fm